The date is June 22nd, 2001, and we're watching The Fast and the Furious. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Dominic Toretto to my Brian O'Connor.
Yes, I do live my life a quarter mile at a time. Hello, I'm That's Colin right. Stewart.
And even voice-wise, I just figured that was the more appropriate, even though Brian O'Connor is not the cooler of the two characters.
I appreciate it.
And this week, we're celebrating the release of the new movie Fast and Furious 9, and at the same time, we're doubling down by celebrating the 20th anniversary of this film as well. So we brought back a guest that we haven't had since way back in our episode 10, Con Air, co-founder of a local improv troupe here in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, friend of the show, Jordan Ward. Welcome back, Jordan.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Oh, well, we're excited to have you back because, you know, we bring nothing but the most highbrow cinema for you when we have you guest star on our show.
Well, it's a classic. It's a classic, Fast and the Furious.
Yeah.
It's one of those movies that's really, I'm sure, has stood the test of time and will be remembered alongside films like The Godfather and just other classic hits, you know?
Citizen Kane.
Citizen Kane.
Citizen Kane, yes, that's right. It's up there with Citizen Kane.
Yeah. So this week we're looking back at June 2001 when the movies in theaters were Lara Croft Tomb Raider, Moulin Rouge, Evolution, Swordfish, and of course our movie for today, the art house classic, The Fast and the Furious, which earned $207.3 million on a $38 million budget.
And as always, the spoilers will be also be coming at you fast and furious. Nice. So if you don't want to get run over like a car on a NOS-injected high, then hit pause, go watch the movie, then come back and hear what we have to say.
So the tagline that appears on the poster for this movie is, if you have what it takes, you can have it all.
I guess that works.
I'm trying to think about where in the movie that comes from.
I don't know if it does. I mean, I feel like a better tagline, if you're going to pick something from the movie, would either be living life a quarter mile at a time, or it doesn't matter if you win by an inch or a mile.
Yeah.
I feel like both of those would have been better tagline choices.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, those are interesting taglines, for sure. Fast and the Furious. You know, if you have what it takes, you can have all the fury you want. You can be as angry as you like.
Okay, there we go. We put a spin on it. That works. I can get behind that one. But it may not be the best description of this movie. So let's go to Colin and do a 60-second synopsis.
All right, here we go. No, that's Robin Hood. Sorry.
Just a hot mess tonight.
Yeah, sorry, the professionalism is at an all-time low. Okay, here we go. After a rash of high-value heists by an unknown gang of robbers with fast cars, LAPD detective Brian O'Connor is sent undercover to infiltrate LA's underground street racing scene. After finding his way into the good graces of the reigning race lord, Dominic Toretto, Brian finds himself falling deeper and deeper into Dom's world and in love with Dom's sister Mia. As he begins to take a shine to life on the other side of the tracks, the lines between Brian's reality as a cop and his love for his newfound friends begin to blur. Will Brian be able to find out who's behind the heist? What exactly is a 10-second car? How good is the tuna at Toretto's Diner? The answers to all this and more on another episode of I Used to Like This One.
Outstanding. When you launched it to the part about living life on the wrong side of the tracks, I was hoping somehow you would incorporate a speeding train into that analogy as well.
Yeah, I workshopped a couple of things, but I was like, I don't know, none of it. At the end of the day, it was going on too long, so I just had to make it a little bit more succinct.
Right on.
Nice.
So I know that with this movie, I mean, after watching it back, with how ridiculous this franchise has gotten over the years, I kind of forgot how basic this movie was.
Yeah.
But I remember when I first saw this in movie theaters, I remember that I just wanted to drive like a maniac all the way home. Like, it's just such an adrenaline rush. I mean, as dumb as this movie can be, it's just, you know, just pumps you full of, like, its own version of NOS that you just want to live life like that, at least for the next hour after seeing this movie. And all those memories came flooding back to me. Now, Jordan, you're our special guest, and like I said, we only bring you on for the best. We've got Nick Cage, now we've got Vin Diesel. What's your experience with Fast and the Furious?
Well, I like the Fast and the Furious. I used to like it. I'm pretty sure I still do. I also saw it in movie theaters. Geez, 2004, you said, or something like that, hey?
2001. Yeah.
2001. Okay, so I would have been just graduating high school at this time. I was a prime candidate for audience members as far as Fast and Furious go. Prime demographic, I think. High school age.
Yeah.
You know, like fast cars. Yeah, it's good. It delivered exactly what it promised. Lots of action.
Lots of fastness and lots of furiousness.
Yeah, there was fastness, there was furiousness. It was a good movie.
What about you, Colin? What's your experience with Fast and the Furious?
Oh, man.
Don't tell me this is going to be another one of those ones where you started partway through, started with the sequel, and then revisited this later.
No, to be honest, like, here's my experience with Fast and the Furious. I've seen this movie so many times that I questioned whether or not I even needed to watch it before we recorded. But just because I at least watch it once a year, I decided this could be that time for 2021.
Yeah.
I've, like, Fast and the Furious, when I was in grade 9 or 10, I got an Xbox for Christmas. And that was the first time I'd had anything that had DVD capability.
Okay.
And so with the Xbox, my mom also got me my first two DVDs I ever owned, which were Joe Dirt and Fast and the Furious.
Outstanding.
And so
that's a good doubleheader right there.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And so even though the funny thing is, I am not a car person at all. Like, I could not give two shits about cars, but I love this movie. And I mean, yeah, I'm not a big fan of Too Fast, Too Furious or Tokyo Drift. But as soon as The Rock got involved, like,
you were back in.
This became probably the best franchise of all time, I think. Like, it's probably number one, the MCU, and then number two, the Fast and the Furious.
Okay. High praise. Now, I know you mentioned that you're not a car guy. We have established on this show that neither of us seems to be a car guy. What are the chances that you're a bit of a gearhead over there, Jordan? Oh. That look on your face already tells me that I'm barking up the wrong tree here.
Well, I don't know what a car guy be. Yeah. You know, I've driven in cars, I've driven in trucks. Is this like a tribal thing, like a gang thing?
Well,
like,
if I say I'm a car guy or truck guy
is going to be waiting out my door with pipes.
It's like, you know, in the movie, every time they lift up the hood.
And they all basically jizz over the hood.
Yeah, cream themselves. If that happens to you, then you're probably a car guy. Like, there's some of the most gorgeous women I've ever seen walking around them, and all these men are just staring at this engine.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say I'm obsessed with cars, but I've ridden in them.
Would you be able to change your own oil?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think so.
Okay.
Sure.
So, with a YouTube tutorial, or do you think you could go out there right now and put it on a lift and change your own oil? Because I know I couldn't.
Well,
I struggle with wiper blades.
I couldn't do it right now because I'm doing the show with you. So that would be rude if I left and changed my oil now.
Well, alrighty. Let's jump into The Fast and the Furious. It's directed by Rob Cohen, who is the director of Dragonheart, Dragon the Bruce Lee Story, Triple X, The Skulls, The Rat Pack, and The Mummy 3. Classic. Oh, man.
The third DVD I owned, Triple X.
Oh, okay, nice.
Jeez. This Coen family's got a lot of talent. You know, they got all those Coen Brothers movies. The Fast and the Furious now, I'm finding out. A lot of talent in that family.
Is he related, or is that just a wisecrack? Because I didn't know that.
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, okay, okay.
Sounds the same.
It's produced by Neil H. Moritz, who is a producer on all of the Fast and the Furious, except 9 for some reason, plus the Spy Racers cartoon, producer on Triple X, The Skulls and all the sequels, Cruel Intentions and all the sequels, and 21 Jump Street.
Do you find it odd that the guy who's produced all the Fast and Furious movies isn't famous? Like, you wouldn't know what he looks like?
Yeah, I wouldn't have been able to say his name.
Yeah, I find that for most producers. For example, like, I don't know if you guys watch, like, The Office or Parks and Rec, but yeah. Mike Schur. I only recently found out that Mike Schur is Moe's in The Office.
Yeah.
But prior to that, I would have never known who that person is. And he's, like, one of the most famous people in TV.
Yeah, and you have to try to picture him without the Amish neck beard as well.
Yeah.
And he could probably go to the corner store and get a sandwich and not get harassed by, you know, paparazzi or whatever.
Yeah, it seems like maybe being a producer is the best gig in Hollywood. So you can just make millions and not have your life disrupted in any tangible way.
Yeah, you're hanging out somewhere, you know, eating spaghetti or doing whatever a person does. And someone comes up to you, oh, what do you do? Oh, I produced all the Fast and the Furious movies. Who are you? Oh, so-and-so. You know, no one cares. There's no crowd. There's no anything.
Yeah. Well, if you want to know what he looks like, though, he is the Ferrari driver that they drag race. That's this producer. Yeah, Neil Moritz. The director also has a cameo in this movie. He's the Pizza Hut delivery guy that gets blocked off during the first street race. So this movie is written by Gary Scott Thompson, who gets the characters credit for all the other Fast and the Furiouses, a writer on Hollow Man, creator of the shows Las Vegas and Taxi Brooklyn. It's also written by Eric Bergquist. His only other credit is a 2019 short called Fast and the Furious Underground. I'm not sure why he didn't get any based on credits on any of the other movies, but whatever. And it's also written by David Ayer, who is the writer of Fury, SWAT, Training Day, Suicide Squad. So he's where all the real drama for this movie comes in, I think. So we open the movie on the song Furious, performed by Ja Rule, which my subtitles were nice enough to tell me what song was playing.
They get the Furious out of the way right away. Like, you've had the Furious. The rest of the movie is just fast.
And we see a shipping container being loaded onto a truck with someone in the yard making a phone call to someone telling them of what the truck says on the side. And then we cut to the daring nighttime heist with sports cars, and they're shooting the driver with a tranquilizer dart. That seems like a risky maneuver. Above everything else that they've done, you know, sliding across the wire, shooting grappling hooks, I think tranking the truck driver seems like the most dangerous aspect of this entire heist.
I found it interesting because it kind of shows you that at the end of the day, they're still kind of good guys.
Yeah.
But they're not murderers.
As long as they stop the truck and don't wait for it to drive off a cliff.
Yeah. I also remember seeing the trailer for this movie, and the very first time I saw that car, like, slide under the bed of that truck, and just thinking that was the coolest stunt I'd ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah, and they double down on that one. Yeah.
Oh, that was pretty cool. And that movie had a lot of practical stunts. I mean, I'm sure it had its own fair share of CGI, too, but it was still doing that real style of movie making for a portion of it.
Yeah, because the newer ones are so CGI heavy, and I even made a note of the one at the very end where the Charger crashes and flips over Brian's car. And what a beautiful shot that was, and just to think that it was probably practical, or really, really good 2001 CG.
No, it is all practical. Because, like I said, this was like the first DVD I ever had. I watched all the special features and they show you how it's done. And it's like, yeah, obviously they have the camera rig, but it's like they put like a ramp up on the side of that truck and like flip it over. It was crazy.
Yeah.
That's cool.
After this heist scene, we cut to Brian O'Connor testing out his driving in his fancy green car. And he's played by Paul Walker, who was in all the Fast and the Furious until 7 when he passed away. Also in Timeline, Joyride, Into the Blue, She's All That. And of course, also should be noted that when he did die, he wasn't quite finished filming the movie, and his brothers stepped in to kind of fill in the rest of the long shots because they look eerily like Paul Walker. I did read, though, that Mark Wahlberg, Christian Bale, and Eminem were all people that they wanted to cast as Brian O'Connor.
Wow, Eminem, that movie is a completely different... I could see Eminem playing Jesse. I can't see Eminem playing Brian.
No.
And for Christian Bale, I'm wondering if maybe he thought this was related to Terminator somehow because of the last name. You know, John Connor, Brian Connor. Yeah. He probably thought this was some sort of Terminator spinoff.
Yeah.
That would be an epic mashup. Terminator 10.
They already have a Fate of the Furious, but then
Dawn of the Fate of the Furious.
There you go. Rise of the Fast Furious Machines.
Yeah. Honestly, the mashup that I've always wanted was Fast and the Furious and the Transformers, but
still that's built for each other.
A little bit, yeah. Because they could have the cars transforming, yeah. The good guys are driving Autobots.
And they could be fast. The cars could be fast. Maybe they do some sort of heist or something, you know?
And then when they're robots, they're furious.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that would be good.
So this scene, though, where he's driving the car, man, do they have some shaky camera work going on. Like, I guess it's to show the speed, but it's almost nauseating to watch. And I remember this being a scene from the theaters that it was like, afterwards, you're kind of like... like the opposite of Steadicam.
That's one of the things where, you know, if you go even older back into movies, into the 70s, they would have these movies like Bullet and things like that with these fantastic car chases. And it would have been cool to see something like that, or like Mad Max, you know, Road Warrior. They had all this amazing action with cars, lots of fast cars. But you see those bigger wide shots, they don't do them anymore. Now they do everything all in close up. Mm-hmm. It's very, very weird.
I guess it's safety. And then we get to meet Mia Toretto, who works at the Toretto's Market and Cafe, and she is played by Jordana Brewster, who's in all the Fast and the Furious movies except for 2 and 3. And I read that Mia could have been played by Natalie Portman, Sarah Michelle Gellar, Kirsten Dunst, Bijou Phillips, Jessica Biel, and that the part was actually written for Eliza Dushku.
Oh yeah, that makes... I mean, it's kind of funny. I don't know. Those are all... That's like just the lineup of generic 90s women in my mind.
A little bit.
It's just... I mean, obviously Natalie Portman went on to like some acclaim of becoming an Oscar winner, I think. Yeah. But like the rest of them are all just like... And I mean, Jordana Brewster is the same. Like, I often laugh at Mia because she's just so bland. Mm-hmm. She's attractive, obviously, but she's just such a bland character.
Very two-dimensional, yeah.
Well, I guess you have to have some blandness to offset all the wild action of car chases and explosions, you know? They're probably like, what can we do to sort of tamp things down? Well, let's get a real bland person.
I actually read that the filmmakers approached some of the houses that would be featured in the background of some of these scenes and got them to repaint their houses if they were too brightly colored so that the cars would pop. So there was already this situation of blandness versus flashy going on. So there you go. There's your theory wrapped up. She's the blandness to go with all the flash of people like Vin Diesel.
That's a good tagline. The bland and the flash.
So Brian walks into the restaurant, orders his tuna no crust. Is he really anti-crust, or do you think he's ordering something this specific to be memorable as part of his undercover work?
I don't know. I don't understand no-crust people, whether it's sandwiches or pizza. Like, if you don't eat the crust, you're the devil in my eyes. Like, I don't understand what's wrong with you. Sorry to you both if you both don't eat crust, but point stands.
Crust is part of the experience, for sure.
Yeah. Well, my kids are the devil then, according to your theory. But you said it, not me, right?
Exactly.
When it comes to pizza, I am a crust dipper, so I do have that going for me, but the crust still gets eaten. And so in this scene, we get our first look at Dominic Toretto in the back room, who is played by a very surly-looking Vin Diesel, who is in all the Fast and the Furiouses except for number 2, and quote, uncredited in Tokyo Drift. He had, like, just a little walk-on cameo at the end or something, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he shows up in the last race.
I mean, all these movies just blend together so much that it's just hard to remember what's in which.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Plus, Vin Diesel is also in the short films for Fast and the Furious and the video games. He was in XXX. Riddick, which I don't like Riddick, but I loved Pitch Black, which was the origin of the character. And The Pacifier, and of course, I Am Groot. I read that two possibilities for Dom were Colin Farrell and Timothy Oliphant.
Can't see Colin Farrell. Could maybe see Timothy Oliphant, but only because of Hitman.
Yeah.
I don't know. Mm. It's really hard to imagine Vin Diesel not in that role at this point.
That's true.
Yeah, it's become pretty iconic for him. When you think of Vin Diesel, Fast and Furious comes to mind. And I shouldn't say Fast and Furious. I should say the whole title, because there is a Fast and Furious. I think that's a different movie.
Yeah, I think that's 5.
The Fast and the Furious.
No, 4.
4. Yeah, they took out the. They made it faster!
Yeah. Make it faster, furiouser than before.
Take off the. But, you know, you also gotta love a guy that has made such a career out of, like, 4 things. Like, you know, he does have the few odd other movies, like Boiler Room and stuff like that, but it's like he has XXX, he has the Riddick franchise, and he has Guardians. You know, like, so you just gotta appreciate a guy that can make that much of a career out of so little.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a huge fan of The Pacifier.
That's, I have a soft spot for that too, yeah.
Yeah, he's one of the iconic bald people in Hollywood. Yeah. There's Vin Diesel, there's Bruce Willis, and if you're, well, I guess you could reach back way back, Marlon Brando. There's not a lot of bald actors these days.
No. But back in our Die Hard episode, our guest on that episode confused Bruce Willis for Vin Diesel, and we had a good laugh at his expense over it. But it's funny that those are the top 2 that you take out of the gate, because it's like, yeah, those are the bald actors in Hollywood. Oh, and The Rock.
Yeah, The Rock.
Yeah.
But I would say, funny enough, if anybody could have been Dominic other than Vin Diesel, I might have said Bruce Willis. Like a young Bruce Willis.
So outside the cafe, 4 cars pull up, and we see the rest of Dominic's crew, who is Jesse, played by Chad Lindbergh. He has a meh IMDb, he was in October Sky, a handful of episodes of Supernatural. Dustin Diamond, Screech himself, was a possibility. In fact, director Rob Cohen wanted to cast Mario Lopez as Dom, Mark Paul Gosselaar as Brian, and then have Dustin Diamond as well. But the studio execs were afraid it would confuse people to have the cast of Saved by the Bell as new people, so they vetoed the idea. But, like, can you imagine, like, a...
You know, that seems more like an SNL skit than an actual movie.
Yeah. Yeah, because they could have the cafe guy that does magic as one of the other guys, and you know, you could have Jesse as like the Jordana Brewster character. I don't know. I mean, you could just bring in the whole...
Jesse would be Letty, and then Tiffany Amber Thiessen could be Mia,
and Mr. Belding would be the cop.
Yeah,
yeah. So we also have Leon, played by Johnny Strong, who he gets flashbacks in 5 and 6. I don't remember that part. And then we have Vince, played by Matt Schultze, who was in Blade 1 and 2. As different characters, though. He was Kreese and Chupa in those 2 different movies. Hmm. And was also in 5 and 6 with, quote, presumed and, quote, uncredited listed. So... I don't even understand why a movie that's as old as Fast 5 is still having presumed that they're in it. Are they still not sure over at IMDb?
Yeah, he's clearly in it in Fast 5.
Okay.
He's right there at the beginning.
So they just never updated the IMDb then.
Mm-hmm.
It's like how the IMDb credit I'm supposed to have is credited to the wrong Sean Wells, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to remember where he is in Fast 6. I don't remember that.
It must just be some sort of flashback.
Yeah, for sure.
But we also meet Letty, who is played by Michelle Rodriguez, who was in all the Fast and the Furious from 4 on. She was in Lost, she was in the Machete movies, and Avatar. And so they pull up outside, and they talk cars. So this is where I just kind of went blank for a second as they're talking about what they're running and what they need to do to their engine.
You got a hole in your exhaust flow system?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. All I heard was the teacher from Peanuts. Wah, 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 wah. But Vince, oh my god, Vince is just an angry son of a bitch. He does not like the look of Brian. So he tells Brian to not come back. And because it's 2001, he calls him a faggot. Oh man, I can't believe that a movie this recent compared to some of the other ones decided to drop that bomb. But I guess I shouldn't be too shocked from what we've seen on this show as well.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised based on what I remember of being in school around the time this movie came out.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty common vernacular on the schoolyard, I think.
Yeah. But Vince picks a fight with Brian, and Dominic has to break it up. And the whole time, the soundtrack in the background, all we're hearing is, watch your back, watch your back, watch your back. And it's like, I don't know whether this is pumping me up or whether it's like, shut up, someone turn the fucking music off.
I was very pleased with the soundtrack for this entire movie. It's all like my favorite junior high rap rock, new metal, a little bit of gangster rap.
So yeah. Good. Well, and there's the scene where they pull up to the car race, the first underground car race, and it's like you hear like 5 seconds of Limp Bizkit, and then you hear 5 seconds of Ludacris, and then you know, like, it's just...
Yeah, the soundtrack was okay. It had Ludacris and Limp Bizkit and some good hits, but it left me wanting more after watching this movie. I kind of wanted to just kick back and hear a track that was just car sounds.
I wanted something totally out of left field. I wanted like some Kenny Rogers to suddenly start bumping on one of their stereos or something. Yeah. A little Coward of the County soundtrack in this shit, you know? But Dominic takes Brian's wallet and looks at the ID. Oh, Brian Earl Spillner. Sounds like a serial killer name. It really does.
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he says, you work for Harry? Yeah, well, you just got fired. Oh, so this guy, he's got all the clout in the world, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's the king.
The race lord.
Yes.
I think they described him as.
Yeah, it's now street racing time, and Brian meets Hector and Jarule, and this is where we've got all the different soundtracks, Limp Bizkit rolling, just pumping. And a song that the lyrics of the song say too fast, too furious. So I'm just wondering where this fell into the whole idea of naming the sequel, whether they knew there was going to be a sequel already. That one kind of surprised me.
Yeah, I think Too Fast, Too Furious just came about because it's like you have the two right there. When you have the opportunity to put the numbers in the place of words, you just can't pass it up.
Or if you have the chance of putting in a different word in place of the number, like Dumb and Dumber 2, you know, with the T-O-O. Yeah.
It's kind of like in Fate of the Furious, Fast and the Furious 8, how they put the F8 in some of the promos.
Well, because by the time you get to 8 and 9, everyone knows what the Fast and the Furious is. I mean, you could just show Vin Diesel on screen and it's like, well, he doesn't look like Groot, so I guess it's another Fast and the Furious movie coming out.
Because the brand is so tightly wound to his identity.
I did appreciate that when the team does finally roll up, they roll up in a flying V. I thought that was a nice touch.
Right? Yeah, and so we're hearing things like, look at this snowman right here, and what are you running under there, man? You know, like more car talk. And Hector is, okay, you're going to make me find out the hard way. Hell yeah, you brave, you brave. Oh, Brian is just like, he's so cocky. He's just strutting around, but he's so out of place for the cockiness that he displays.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, he looks like he belongs in a Dockers commercial or something, not street racing.
Yeah, he doesn't come across as an urban street racer at all.
Yeah, not at all.
Looks like he should be mowing a lawn or maybe fixing a car.
Yeah. Well, Hector does have a great line here, though, where he says, don't ask me my last name because I can't pronounce it. I'm wondering whether this was, like, ad-lib by the actor because he couldn't pronounce the name that they had written for him. So Dominic and his crew show up, like Colin said, in a perfect flying V. Brian can't buy his way into the race, but puts up his pink slip to compete against Dominic. And we also get to find out what a jealous lady Letty is when she has her whole, I smell skanks. That's one line that it's kind of like, ah, come on, why?
Yeah.
There's something about Michelle Rodriguez in this movie, though, where she's always wearing her sunglasses down on the end of her nose. There's just something that bugs me about her for... And I don't know if it's that. I don't know if it's the sunglasses.
Yeah. Unlike Jordana Brewster, who throughout the entire franchise is just, you know, maybe she is just meant to be that level base. It is nice to see later in the later movies that Letty actually gets some development in story.
Yeah, she does get better, a little more depth.
She's tough as nails.
Yeah.
So I must say, this street racing setup is, like, really quite a production. And, like, no respect at all as they spray paint a line on the road. But, like, they're so choreographed with pulling in their cars and making a starting line. I know this movie is based on an article, but do you think it ever gets this big in the underground street racing scene?
Yeah, I don't know.
The movie's based on an article?
Yeah. Second time for you! Holy shit! Sorry, Con Air wasn't based on an article. That's what it was. But we thought it could have been because Colin had found an article written afterwards. That's what it was.
Well, what was the article? Cars Race?
It's called Racer X. And it was just an article about, like, underground street racing in California.
Wow. Interesting.
So I like that we see that Brian is still a bit of a klutz. He overshoots the start line. And then we've got the whole bit with Jarul, which is just so bonkers out of left field. And, like, we never see him again in the movie, but where it's the girl comes up with the huge breasts and it's, you know, Edwin, this is yours whether you win or lose, and puts his hand on her breasts. But if you win, you get her too. So, I mean, his motivation is, hello, time for some Eiffel Tower situation. Not Eiffel Tower. That's the devil's threesome. Sorry.
Yeah, you're on your own.
The devil's threesome is two guys, and so you you Eiffel Tower a chick.
Mm.
You've never heard the term Eiffel Tower?
No, I've not.
Well, I'm familiar with the building.
Well, think of how the building's shaped. It's...
Okay.
Off on a tangent. Anyway, so yeah, that's his motivation, is the promise of a threesome. But Brian is giving himself affirmations that he's gonna win, and everyone's turning on their NOS, and we've got the one Asian guy playing video games in his car, and of course the Pizza Hut delivery guy who is played by the director, that they tell him to go around, Pizza Man. And then they're off, and we show the inside of the engine with special effects. Now, this is probably the only CGI that's in the movie, is when they're showing the interior of the engines. But it's not too bad. It kind of held up.
Yeah, I thought there was going to be way more damage considering parts were flying off of it and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it still obviously operates well enough that he can, you know, escape and go rescue Dom.
Now, I have to say that the computer setup that Brian has in his car does not seem like the best way to set up his system. Like, this is a batshit crazy idea to have a full laptop on the seat beside you for a quarter mile race. And, I mean, let's get on that as well. It's a quarter mile race. How come this scene is 2 minutes long?
That's what I didn't get. Like, I was thinking that street racing, like you normally see, it's just a straight line. But yeah, it seemed like these guys were like, it was more like how you would play in a video game, like Gran Turismo or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where they're San actually Francisco Rush.
Where they're going through, like, through a block, almost.
But, like, a person could probably speed walk a quarter mile faster than the length of this scene. These are supposed to be 10-second cars. Isn't that what a 10-second car is? Is something that can do a quarter mile in 10 seconds? The scene is much, much longer than 10 seconds.
Ooh.
Interesting. I wasn't familiar with that term, 10-second cars, and what it meant. That's news to me. So that's kind of fun. I guess there's a lot of things you could do in a car in 10 seconds.
Yeah. That's just my assumption, though, is that's what a 10-second car... I figured that's what it means. Because he's bragging about his charger at the end.
Hmm.
And it's all about 10 seconds or less. Yeah? I don't know.
I thought it had maybe something to do with, like... And again, I'm not a car enthusiast, but I always hear people talk about, like, the time it takes to go from 0 to 60.
Yeah. But 10 seconds doesn't seem fast because a lot of factory cars are like 0 to 60 in 5 seconds or something, you know?
That is true.
Or 2.5 or less, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, if it's taking 10 seconds to get up to 60, you got a pretty slow car.
Yeah. Yeah, now that I think about it, that is fair.
Yeah.
But Brian hits his NOS and his car literally comes apart when the floor panel falling off on the passenger side, and Dominic wins the race.
Back to the soundtrack on this thing, they missed an opportunity. They should have had NOS on the soundtrack. They're using NOS in the movie. NOS is a rapper. Could have had a great collaboration there.
Was he around in 01, though? Because, I mean, we don't know what Fast and Furious 9 is going to have. Maybe they're going to have that catchy little Billy Ray Cyrus and NOS song that is out there.
No, you're thinking there's Nas and then there's Lil Nas X.
Okay.
I'm ashamed that I even know this. But yeah, Lil Nas X is the one who did the Billy Ray Cyrus song.
Okay.
But Nas, I feel like Nas would be too, he was too good, for lack of a better word. Like, I don't think he would want his music used in anything that had Ja Rule.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
So Dominic ends up winning the race. And then we get an N-bomb drop with the girl that Ja Rule was feeling up. I don't think she's black, though. I don't think she should be using that word.
Yeah.
I see her as some sort of Hispanic.
Yeah, that's what I
was saying. Full of all sorts of words.
Words all over the place. Fast, furious, N-bomb, you know. So... At the end of this race, though, Brian is smiling, and he's excited because he says to Dominic, "Dude, I almost had you," which is a quote that I have seen on the back of people's cars in decal form. Have you guys seen these people that have the RIP Paul Walker, and it always has the quote of, "Dude, I almost had you"?
No.
No.
I've seen at least Never. Five different ones in this city. Nice. Oh, man.
They all must live near you.
No, I work as a bus driver, so I'm all over the city.
Do you think they all know each other? Is this a group?
Oh, maybe. Yeah, it's like a fan club. Outstanding. So Dominic drops some knowledge, though. It don't matter if you win by an inch or a mile. Winning is winning. And then we get like this straight up roast happening of Brian with everyone like where we've got a lot of people saying derogatory things and then other people are covering their mouths and going, "Oh, shit," you know, that kind of roast happening, you know, you gotta love it. We're obviously in the hood now, boys. But the police scanners go off and tell them that the cops are in the area and everybody scatters. That's quite the operation that these cops have going, though. They've got like 20 police cars out there. I'm surprised that they have this whole sting.
The funny thing is, when Leon is like, "Oh, they're at a 187, which sounds like it was a homicide."
If Demolition Man has taught me anything, yeah.
It's hard for me to believe that every single police unit in the LAPD would have been gone that way. Like that was going to cause enough of a distraction for this race to take place.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. It's no wonder that all these cops like show up. I don't know what kind of neighborhood. It seems kind of industrial, but also kind of commercial. So probably got like a lot of complaints coming in. But it almost reminds me of like a rodeo of sorts. It's like you just send everybody in to try to like a calf scramble, see how many you can get.
Yeah. Well, I mean, of course, like people are calling in complaints. They're spray painting on their fucking road. That's some high stakes graffiti removal that those business owners on that street have to do the next day.
I bet it was the pizza delivery guy. He probably tipped off the cops.
Oh, there you go. Yes. These fuckers made me go around.
Yeah, and I bet you that pizza guy probably had some binoculars watching this from afar. And when he saw the police moved in, muttered to himself, "Yeah, just go around that."
So Dominic hides his car in a parkade and he tries to walk away nonchalantly when the cop car sees him and we get the foot chase. You know, Dominic, when a cop knows your first name, you shouldn't run. And I don't understand why this never amounted to anything else. This cop obviously knew who he was. How come he doesn't get picked up later that night at his house?
Yeah, that's a good point.
But we get Brian to the rescue, and Dominic gets in the car, and neither of them are wearing seatbelts, which you think he would want to do considering technically there's no floor panel on Dominic's side of the car, is there? It fell off in the race.
Yeah, it's kind of like a Flintstones car at that point.
Yeah. Jeez. Yeah, I don't think he ever got his floor panel fixed. I think this is a major plot hole worth exploring.
Well, it's a major car floor hole, that's for sure.
The floor hole is a plot hole. holes within holes.
So this is when all the Asians on motorcycles show up and force them over, led by Johnny Tran, who is played by Rick Yoon. And Dominic says, oh shit, we're in for a long night, but not really, because the guys spend like 3 minutes talking to him. Like, the drag race that we just watched almost took longer.
Yeah.
Mm.
But, you know, the standout of these gang members, of the Wolfpack gang, has to be Lance, because those snakeskin pants, those are a choice, that's for sure.
Yeah, you have to commit if you're going to wear snakeskin.
Yeah. Lance is played by Reggie Lee, and Lance is just a weirdo, because he's also got that one line of where Johnny asks him, isn't it a beautiful car? And he goes, it's an amazing machine. And it's just like, ooh, I'm getting some weird vibes from
psychopath
you.
Psychopath vibes.
Yeah.
Yeah, car guy vibes.
And then a couple of these guys come back after they all take off and shoot up the car, and it starts on fire, and the NOS explodes. Man, NOS flames are cool. Oh, I love the green flames.
I was thinking I would love to go back to 2001 and see how many NOS explosion deaths occurred just due to this movie, and people being like, oh, that's so cool, I want to put NOS in my car, and then messing it up and like blowing themselves up.
Well, I know the beginning of the DVD that I watched had a special public service announcement from Paul Walker saying that these are all professional stunts done by professional people. And, you know, I wonder whether they had to put that because from the time of the theatrical release until the time that the DVD was released, I wonder how many people died from trying to go underneath a semi-truck.
Or that, you know? Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, when something gains popularity, there's usually a rise in some sort of correlated way. So like when Rocky was real popular, more people signed up to boxing gyms. Mm-hmm. And when, you know, Karate Kid was popular, people would sign up to karate. So with Fast and Furious, I assume that you'd have a bunch of people who have no idea what they're doing, want to get into street racing. Or mm-hmm. after the movie, they're all hopped up and excited and want to, like you said, race your car. So there was probably an increase in speeding tickets and accidents and
yep.
you know, all sorts of things after these movies.
For sure. Yeah. So Brian does ask, what was that all about? And Dominic says, it's a long story. And he says, well, I've got time. It's a long walk back. So Dominic tells him that it's a business deal gone sour. Plus, I made the mistake of sleeping with his sister. Doesn't sound like a long story to me. It seems like he summed it up fairly well in one sentence.
I mean, but that is a long story for Vin Diesel. It's very rare that he strings together more than two syllables.
No, I Am Groot is three syllables.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that in like Fast 5 to Fast 8, the majority of his words are just grunts. And looks like I think he it's all, like I don't know that he actually has that much dialogue.
So they get back to Dominic's house where a party is going on. Dominic invites Brian in for a beer, and Mia decides she has to make herself presentable. Vince is pissed though because Dominic has brought the Buster home. What did you bring the Buster here for? Because the Buster kept me out of handcuffs. Oh boy, you just put Vince in his place, Dom.
I love that. Like, the Buster brought me back. Knife in heart twist.
Yeah.
Wow. Kept him out of cuffs. But the irony is he's trying to put him in cuffs.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's true. So Dominic tells Brian, you can have any beer you want as long as it's a Corona. And come on, that means it's time for Sponsorship Corner. Now, Colin, I have a feeling that even though I'm the one who does the sponsors, you probably looked at this movie and thought, this one is going to be a fucking nightmare for Sean.
Well, I mean, there's just so many auto parts. I was like, I swear at least a third of the list has to be auto parts companies.
Yep. Let me tell you, this was a fucking nightmare for Sean. It's insane. Every car was plastered in decals. I had to watch the movie a whole extra time just for sponsors. patreon.com/I used to like this one.
Yes.
And I'm sure I still miss some of them because my DVD wasn't high enough definition. So anyone watching on Blu-ray may be able to see better some of the smaller ones. But my notes were so long on this one. If you're a listener that doesn't like Sponsorship Corner, skip forward a few minutes. This is going to be a long one. Always on the lookout for product placements and movies. Here we motherfucking go! This week, The Fast and the Furious is brought to you by, I've organized it here, food products, Corona, Budweiser, and Pacifico Clara beers, Tropicana juice, Snapple, Red Bull, Coca-Cola, Lay's potato chips, and Pizza Hut, Yokohama, Pirelli, Masimoto, ZX, Goodyear, Michelin, BF Goodrich, and Toyo tire brands. Okay, vehicle brands, Lexus, Peterbilt, Dodge Charger, Toyota, Ford, Nissan, Volkswagen, Honda, Yamaha, Kawasaki, Mitsubishi, Ferrari, GMC, and Union Pacific Railroad. Electronics, we got Panasonic, big time, because that's what all the DVD players are, Clarion, Alpine, Compaq, Dell, and Nextel. And then others, we've got Craftsman and Mastercraft Tools, Von Dutch Clothing, Evergreen Shipping Containers, Broma Cranes, Oakley, Chevron Gas Station, Joy Dish Soap, Nira Drag Racing, Shuei Helmets, Winchester AA Shotgun Shells, KJ Transport, Yellow Cab Company, and the movie Dragon, the Bruce Lee story. Halfway there. Here's the big part. Automotive parts and whatnots, extra mud flaps, Toucan, Eurolight, NOS, iBox Springs, Atomic Zen, Advan, Blitz Power Performance, Stickcraft, Koning, Sebring, SpeedOptions.com, Speakeasy.net, Axis, HKS Motorsports, Sparco Seats, Veilside, The Racer's Edge, Apex, Ractiv, Bomex Graphics, G-Ready, Racing Heart Rims, Koenig Adjustables, Legend Suspension, Hose Wires, Chikara Motorsports, Still and Brakes, Autometer, VLS Racing Sports, and LPR Performance. And finally, a few that may be real and a few that definitely aren't. I got tired of Googling at this point because I had to look up all those auto part ones because I don't know a fucking thing about cars. Special shout out to T&K Food Market, Azteca Meat Market, El Gato Negro, Cha-Cha-Cha Cuban Restaurant, Grill Craft Sports Grill, Toretto's Market and Cafe, and DT Renegade Auto, which is Dominic Toretto's Garage. And holy shit, this has been Sponsorship Corner. That one was stupid.
That's good. That was a lot of brands.
My son came up while I was watching the movie, and he watched about 30 seconds of it and went, "This is going to be a bad Sponsorship Corner, isn't it?" And I'm like, "Oh, you have no idea." And I showed him my pages of notes.
Oh, wow.
And my son is famous for getting up and getting a beer while I'm doing Sponsorship Corner. So, I mean, he would have had time to get one, drink it, and go get another one, I'm sure.
Oh, wow.
So, as Dom abandons Brian with all the people who don't like him to go give Letty a massage, Mia comes to Brian's rescue because Vince is busy flexing and tells him that my brother likes you, but he doesn't like anyone. There's no way this could backfire. The next day, Brian gets pulled over by cops, but then, oh shit, it turns out that Brian O'Connor is a cop. And we've just met Sergeant Tanner, who is played by Ted Levine, who was in Silence of the Lambs. He was James Gum / Buffalo Bob. He was also in Joyride with Paul Walker.
Hmm.
But the cops are investigating the heists on the highway, and all they really have as evidence is, like, the car's make and model and the tire tread. So that's the loose thing that they're basing this entire investigation on, is tire treads. You know, because only one person... I mean, clearly, I just listed 12 different types of tires. I mean, there's one for everybody. There's no way anyone else would run the same tires on a sports car.
Yeah, tires are like fingerprints, I thought. They're all different.
Are they that specific?
No.
Oh, okay, not. Okay. You actually had me for a second there. Okay.
Yeah, I think they're largely the same. I mean, they're made of rubber. You know, every car has exactly four.
So, Brian ends up bringing Dominic the car that he owes him, and it's a burnt out piece of crap, but apparently it's got a good engine. Even though, like, they pop the hood, and I don't know whether this is a good engine. It looks like a piece of shit, but everyone is like, like, everyone is so excited by the whatever is running under this hood. But you've got a chassis and an engine that you're probably going to replace most of. Is that all that's actually useful on this car?
Yeah, I don't know. Okay. I don't know what the deal is. I mean, to me it seems like you're just, they literally say, like, you know, if you put 15 grand in it, it'll be a good car. But yeah, could you not just buy a good car for 15 grand? Or at least, I don't know.
Or yeah, or 15 grand more, or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's odd.
It all has to be, like, a reason to transplant himself into this guy's life. It's, I mean, that's obviously the only reason, but when I don't look at the engine and think that it's impressive, but I'm not a car guy, so.
Yeah.
But Dominic tells Brian, whenever you're not working for Harry, you're working here. And if you don't find a tool in this garage that you need, you shouldn't be around cars. And so we get a little backstory of Jesse and his ADD. I like Jesse as a character. I kind of wish that there was a little bit more to him. Like, they focus so much on, especially Vince, mm-hmm. as far as, like, the side, you know, squad goes. And I like Jesse the most, I think.
Yeah.
Mm. So cut to a barbecue at Dominic's house, and Vince throws a little hissy fit and takes off because he sees that Brian is there. And because Jesse was the first to reach for chicken, he has to say grace. I do love his grace, where he's basically praying to the car gods or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love that. But Vince comes back with his tail between his legs, and he's, I gotta eat, okay? So Dominic lets him sit down, and he kisses his head like he's the godfather, I guess.
There's a real like, Jesus vibe happening at this table. Like, it's almost like Jesus and the disciples.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's true, because, I mean, like, Brian is straight up Judas, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Judas also met Jesus as he was an undercover police officer, just kind of infiltrating the group, and they like to race a lot together. Very, very similar.
He was an undercover agent for the Roman Empire at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was just unfair having to race them, because Jesus could just go straight across the river. The other guys had to find a way around.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, as long as he had one of those Flintstone holes in his car, you know, so he could do the walking.
Oh, yeah, there we go. Yeah.
It's the only way it would work.
I was thinking foot race. I mean, I wasn't going back and saying that they had cars. Come on, that's ridiculous. So... But Hector comes into the store the next day while Brian's working to buy 3 sets of parts, and so Brian helps him out. And then that night, Brian goes to do a little police work, and he breaks into Hector's shop to look at tire treads. But on his way out, he gets caught by Dominic and Vince, but he talks his way out by telling them that he was checking what kind of cars they had.
There's this whole scene here where, like, they ask him if he's a cop or not, and I feel like this is where... There was a whole thing around this time where people were adamant that if you asked somebody if they were a cop, and they were, that they had to tell you,
mm-hmm.
which is not at all the case. And in a world where we know that people do undercover work, like, why would you ever expect it to be? But I always found this scene interesting, because I feel like that's kind of the assumption here. It's like, oh, it's like the stakes are that, oh, he has to tell them, like,
mm-hmm.
and then he doesn't, and then it's like, yeah, it's weird, but.
Vince is definitely not convinced, though, because he says he moans like a cop. So Vince is 100% on board with this guy being a cop.
How many cops has he heard moan to be able to know what somebody moans like a cop?
I thought he said he moves like a cop.
Oh, well, see, but I'm thinking, yeah, for a squad that use trank darts for their heists, what else are they into, though, that they are hearing these cops moaning? Yeah. But Brian convinces Dom that, you know, I can't lose again. And so Dom says, let's go for a little ride. And so, like, the whole time, Vince has sort of been pushing him around with the shotgun and get up. And they get in the car to go to Tran's place to look at their cars. But then they get out of the car and they're just kind of cool with Brian again. Like, he's no longer holding the gun on him. Was there a conversation in the car on the way over that convinced Vince to put the piece away?
And they probably bonded over their love of cars.
Yeah. And Mia.
But Jesse, who is on lookout, warns them that the wolf pack is coming, and we have this whole scene with the shady fence guy that they start torturing by pouring oil into his mouth because he owes them engines. I don't quite understand the point of this scene other than the fact that Brian sees some DVD players sitting around.
Yeah, I'm unclear on what happened to the engines and why they were missing.
There's that too. Yeah, that's another big question.
Were they stolen? Or did he order them and they never came? I wasn't sure what happened there.
Yeah, see, I think it's the guy that they were pouring the oil into was supposed to get them stolen engines. And they still didn't have their engine. I don't know.
See, now I'm starting to question these people's knowledge about cars, because you're supposed to pour it in a car and not in a person.
Yeah. unless it's canola oil or olive oil. Those are cooking oils,
yeah,
but not car oil.
Yeah, that's the type of oil a person would like to eat.
But, you know, I didn't realize, and this is embarrassing as a 42-year-old man that, I mean, I've established I'm not a car guy, but I didn't realize that the W in 10W30 stood for weight, which he's like, oh, which weight? Should it be 40 or 20? And I'm like, wait, what are they talking about? And then it suddenly hit me. I'm like, ah, oh, that's the W. Okay. I don't know what the numbers mean, but...
I learned something now, too.
Yeah, one's thicker than the other. More viscous.
Oh, there you go.
So we cut to the cop headquarters in Eddie Fisher's house, where they're worried that Brian is going native. And they're deciding whether or not they need to move in on Toretto. And he's like, no, just give me more time. So we cut back to Brian and Dom working on the car with the other guys. And Dom is asking Brian what he plans on doing that night with his sister. I kind of wanted an honest answer. I'm gonna take her back home. See how that plays.
What if he just looked at Dom and was like...
So then Dom says he wants to show Brian something. And he takes him to the house to show him his car. I don't understand why this couldn't have waited until later. Like, you know what? Let's leave the car for now. Let's head all the way over to my place, just so I can show you my car and tell you my sad story about my dad, you know?
I love when he's like, I don't care about the mortgage. I don't care about the garage. I don't care about the team. I just live my life a quarter mile at a time. I'm like, well, you should probably care about all those things. Like, those are good things to care about. You need to take care of stuff.
Yeah, and... And for the fact that everything is all about family is such a part of the future movies, I think that's probably the more important thing to you, because you say so later, at least.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's hard to tell what's the most important to him. He likes doing heists. He likes family, but like you say, he doesn't care about the mortgage. It's an odd thing.
Yeah, unless he's planning on sleeping in his car.
Yeah,
his family will get evicted and he'll say, boy, honey, you know, things are terrible, but look at this car. Look at how great that is. Look at that engine.
We can literally live life a quarter mile at a time.
Yeah, the scene actually does reveal something very sad about their existence, because you never really learn the reason why they're doing the heist. Obviously, it's to buy these things to make money. But now, the assertion is that all this money is literally just going into buying car parts.
Yeah,
to soup up their cars so that they can win races to make money to buy more car-associated things. Like,
yeah, it's very true. It's a vicious circle.
Sounds like they have a car addiction.
Mm. Yeah.
Yes. But, yeah, what an Oscar-worthy speech from Vin Diesel. You know, for those 10 seconds or less, I'm free. But we also find out, though, that he's scared to drive his father's car. And then we get our date night with Brian and Mia. And he tries to find out a little bit about the team, and we get a little backstory, and they talk about how when Letty turned 16, that's when she started getting Dom's attention. So did they start dating when she was 16?
I think they started being more than friends at that point.
But nothing exclusive, it must be, because keep in mind that Dominic says that he fucked Johnny Tran's sister.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Starting to think that he's not a very nice character.
No, maybe not. And then she says, you want to go for a drive? And then she drives completely fucking recklessly. Why does everyone drive like an asshole in this movie?
Because they're driving fast and furious.
But in a race, I understand. But why take that risk in your hands when you're just going for a Sunday drive?
That's what happens when you live your life a quarter mile at a time. The Toretto family motto.
Yeah. That's on the old Toretto family crest. They've got like a NOS booster in one corner and the charger in another corner.
I was going to say it's just a charger with wings.
The funniest thing, though, about her wanting to go for a drive is when Jordana Brewster was cast, she didn't even have a learner's permit.
Oh, really?
Neither did Michelle Rodriguez. Neither of these women had their driver's license or even their learner's permit. So they must have gone to, like, the best driver training school around. Like, I don't know how much of the driving they actually do, but they probably learned some high-end shit from the producers of this film.
Mm-hmm.
I find it astonishing that in 2001, women didn't have permission to learn. Terrible.
Man, we've come a far way in 20 years.
Yeah, leaps and bounds.
And then we get montage time with a little sexy time between Dominic and Letty. They were actually dating in real life when this movie was made, so that's why it's extra steamy. The cops are raiding the places to pick up the Asian guys, but it all turns out to be for nothing because Tran and his guys get out because the DVD players they purchased were purchased legally. Why did they have just a big old stack of DVD players? Like, that's got to be the most coincidental red herring ever.
Yeah, that didn't make sense to me why you would just have... I thought that there was DVD players, but I thought there was also, like, a bunch of TVs and stuff in the warehouse.
Yeah,
but it really seems like enough to suggest that they were stolen. Or do the Trans just also run an electronics store that we're unaware of?
Yeah, this is Overstock?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know if they were able to unload those DVD players, because eventually Blu-ray comes out, and that's going to make those kind of redundant.
Yeah.
But Brian is still refusing to believe that Dominic is actually the bad guy. He's got 36 hours to get a confession out of Dominic before they just drive in and bust him, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And so we cut to the drag race between their completed car. They finally completed their car and a Ferrari because, you know, why not? Still no seatbelts. No one ever wears seatbelts in this movie. Well, except when they're like in the quarter mile races. Then they've got the racing harnesses on. But just driving around, no one wears a seatbelt. And so Dominic and Brian go for lunch, and then Dr. Dominic comes into play now because he can tell that there's something wrong with Brian. So Brian pushes and saying that he wants in on whatever Dominic's doing. And Dom gives him directions to the race wars, and we'll see how you do. Then we'll talk. So really, though, that should be enough at this point for Brian to go, oh, wait, there might be something else going on here. Because he didn't confirm or deny it. That feels like an affirmative to me.
Yeah, like he clearly knows what they're doing. I was trying to think, like, maybe what he's waiting for is the chance to match the treads.
Mm-hmm.
Because he still hasn't been able to match the treads of the cars that they use in the heist, because they keep them, obviously, off their base or whatever.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, after, like, race wars and everything, like, when the team leaves to go do their heist, like, he already knows, like, what they're doing.
Yeah.
It's not a mystery anymore at this point. Like,
yeah.
But we already know he's gone rogue by this point, so.
Yeah, pretty much.
All he needs to do is get close enough to get a bunch of that fingerprinting dust onto the tire of the car.
Yeah.
And then lift the print of that tire, because those tires are like fingerprints. Each one is unique.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we've established that, that's for sure. So then it's time for the race wars. With your comment earlier about how hot everybody was in the underground street race, it's interesting how much less hot the spectators are at a legitimate race. Because there were a lot of bellies in this scene. Like, I know that the film, they invited people to come out with their cars. So most of these people are just there for basically a show and shine, right? They put out a call to people with fancy cars. But the hotness factor has definitely decreased significantly in this scene.
Yeah, it's,
except for the wet t-shirt contest.
Yeah, it's less Hollywood, more trailer park.
Yeah, there we go. So Letty makes $2,000 in her race, and this was the part where the sunglasses were really bugging me, when she's like beaking off at the guy next to her,
yeah,
who's completely chauvinistic. Hey, sweetheart, you shouldn't be racing. Jordan educated us on the fact that women shouldn't have been learners back then.
Well, they wouldn't permit these women to learn, is what I'm saying. It's a terrible thing.
That's why they call it a learner's permit.
I don't know when that stopped, but and it wouldn't affect me because I'm not a woman, but still, you hate to hear it.
So Jesse tries racing for Pink's against Tran and ends up losing, so he takes off. But Jesse's Jetta, they may not end up delivering this car to Tran, but it was, in fact, purchased by Frankie Muniz after this film was done.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I don't understand that scene. When Brian is talking to Jesse, Jesse says something like, oh, this fool is running a 2000 Honda. Mm-hmm. It's like he doesn't know who Johnny Tran is.
Yeah.
Even when he looks over at him, he's just like, like, you don't know who that guy is? The guy that you know puts $100,000 under his car?
Yeah, you think this guy is going to show up at a race with a stock car?
Yeah, I didn't understand that.
You know what I don't understand about these cars? They say if you put $20,000 into it, it'll go faster. But I didn't experience that. I put $20,000 into my car. I put in $20,000 into getting a new trunk. And I didn't get an extra ounce of speed out of it.
A $20,000 trunk.
Yeah, and it didn't improve my mileage one bit.
The storage space must have been insane.
That was okay.
I could only get 2.5 dead bodies in there. I mean, I was hoping for a full 3. I'm tired of dismemberment. You know, though, I must say that for all these fancy souped up shit that all these cars have, that when you see them use their NOS, the NOS buttons always look so cheap. Just these cheap red buttons, and they've always got, like, you know, that VTEC label on it that says, you know, like, NOS 1, NOS 2. I don't understand why they can't have flashier buttons for their NOS.
Yeah, I mean, in later movies, for whatever reason, they look so much like fighter pilot setups.
Yeah.
Like, even when I'm thinking of later movies, they have these, like, flick switches, mm-hmm, and it's almost like you have to have the thing, like, it's the nuclear button.
Yeah.
And it's a little plastic flip you have to lift up to hit the button.
Yeah, you have to make sure that you bring someone in your passenger seat so that you can both turn the key at the same time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I prefer a more old-school way to activate my liquid nitrogen. I like a big old crank. You get the wooden crank rather than the button.
Yeah. My windows don't need power. Why does my NOS button? Yeah. But then it cuts to that night, and you gotta love the 2001 rave going on here, because you've got the people with the glow sticks that they're just waving them all around, and
yeah. little ball thing.
Yeah. Brian goes looking for Mia, but can't find her in the trailer, and then he overhears her arguing with Dominic. I don't know how, considering, like, there's a rave going on. I don't think the conversation was that loud, but whatever, he overhears them, it gets his attention. And Dominic has taken off, but Brian goes up to Mia. He knows that Dominic's going to be in trouble if he goes to do what he knows he's going to do, and then confesses that he's a cop. Like, he just folds.
This is pathetic. Yeah. He's trying to get the other guy to confess, and he confesses. He's got it backwards.
But he assures, because, you know, any romantic storyline needs him to say that everything I said to you, I meant it. I swear to God, because you always have to have that confession speech.
Yeah.
But he tells her that you're the only one that can help me. So they drive off to go after him. I mean, that seems against police procedure to bring the witness with you instead of just the information that you need, but whatever. And then it's heist time, and they're one man short because Jesse is still missing. But they're talking that saying, your sister's right about this one. It feels wrong. Is that because it's taking place in daytime when all the other ones are night? I don't understand why they left at night and they're doing like this broad daylight. That's a ballsy heist.
Yeah. I'm not sure why they made that choice. Plus, the drivers will be more alert. I mean, I feel like by doing it at night, half the thing would be just like the driver's probably going to be a little bit more tired.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I find strange? Is a lot of criminal gangs would go after diamonds or something real valuable. But this gang's going after DVD players.
Yeah, but 2001, that was still a $600 item. I mean,
It's funny, in the beginning of the movie, you can see them putting them on the car, and they have some of those ones that are literally like the DVD player TV set, which I feel like you could not give away today. Like,
were they even DVD TVs? I thought they were VHS TVs.
Yeah, they might have been VHS.
I had one of those.
There you go.
But the heist doesn't go as planned because the trucker has a shotgun, and Vince gets all tangled up in his wire, and Dominic is trying to save him, but his car gets shot up, and Letty's car gets shot up, and Letty crashes, and then we get to see the daring car underneath the semi stunt again, but then it's Brian to the rescue. And I must say, I mean, they flip off the top while they're going like 100 and whatever miles an hour, but his stuntman has a much more pronounced widow's peak than Paul Walker does. All I could see was stuntman during this moment when he's standing on the edge of his car.
That's a pretty cool stunt.
It is. Like, I will give it that. I don't know. I'm wondering how much of it was filmed at like a quarter speed and they just digitally made the wheels look faster.
Well, if they're living their life, you know, one quarter speed at a time with filming.
So Brian manages to save Vince, but because of his injury, he's bleeding out and he ends up having to call for air support. So when he calls, he says he's MAPD. I can't find any police service in California that matches this acronym. Did he just accidentally not say LAPD? Like, I thought maybe it would be like Malibu, but like I said, I Googled California Police Services and there was nothing that would give me the acronym of MAPD. He also in this phone call says that Vince is shot in the left flank. Isn't a flank another word for bum? Because Vince was shot in the side.
Yeah, I don't know where does the flank steak come from? Do you know anything about steaks?
I figure that's a rump roast, or, well, you know, like, or comes from that area. That's what I thought. Or is it, or like a thigh, maybe?
Oh, well, flank must be the side, because, yeah, rump roast, I recognize that term.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I mean, instead of saying shot in the stomach, he goes with flank, of all things, but...
Right.
But yeah, this is where he reveals himself as a cop to Dominic in order to save Vince's life, even though Vince has done nothing for him, and he gets Vince airlifted to hospital. So then Brian then goes to do some cop stuff at Dominic's house, and we have the whole I'm not running scene, and they both got guns on each other, and we've got this Mexican standoff, and this is when Jesse shows up. So thank God he's okay until 7 seconds later. Yeah. 7 seconds later when we've got a drive-by shooting from the motorcycle Asians, and Brian hops in his car to go after the motorcycles. He's made his choice. And we've got this exciting chase scene. I must say that for Brian to hit his NOS on these hilly roads, that's a man's move right there. I don't think I'd want to be going that fast over some of those hills that he was going on. I didn't think Los Angeles was this hilly, for one, but still, he's firing that NOS on all cylinders. That's a car thing, right?
Well, I mean, it's partially, it's got a lot of valley, though. So, I mean,
I guess so.
Depending where you are, but it's pretty, like, has hilly areas, I guess.
Yeah, I guess I've only gone to the flatter parts.
Okay. Yeah, okay. There's Beverly Hills, isn't there? The Hollywood Hills?
Yeah, I guess it's, right there in the name. Dominic is also in on this chase scene, and then the two motorcycle guys get taken out by Dominic and Brian separately, and then Brian, always the good cop, yells at someone to call 911 and then goes after Dominic. What would you think if you pulled up to this situation? This guy has just crashed his motorcycle. Someone with a gun in his hand runs up, checks his pulse, runs away saying, call 911, and then takes off in like a fancy sports car. Would you be like, what? Should I call 911? Like, what would you think? Or would it be like, I saw fuck all. I'm out of here.
I know what I'd be thinking. I'd be thinking, what kind of engine's in that car?
Of course you would. Yeah.
What kind of system you running under that hood?
And so he catches up with Dominic, and we get a drag race to finish the movie with them trying to get to a train crossing, and it's a high-stakes drag race because there's a train coming at that moment. It seems awfully convenient that this train happens to start showing up at that time as well.
Yeah.
But they both make it. But Dominic totals his dad's car. And this is where we have that awesome, awesome, beautiful camera angle of Dominic's car flipping overhead. And Brian, for some reason, gives him his car, saying that, well, he owes him a 10-second car. But yeah, this is another one of those quarter-mile races that definitely took more than 10 seconds, which makes it even harder to understand why it's referred to as a 10-second car.
Mm-hmm.
Dominic flees, and Brian hears the sirens, and then the end. Except there's a bit of post-credit scene to where Dominic has made it to Baja, Mexico, and he's driving an entirely different car now. But it's just basically voiceover of him telling us the same thing about living his life a quarter mile at a time, and for those 10 seconds or less, he's free. And that is the Fast and the Furious.
Nice.
Now, Colin, Jordan, on IMDb, it scored a 6.8 out of 10 and has a Metascore of 58. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has a 53% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 74%. But, Colin, those are just numbers. Like, hitting a garbage truck after you've just avoided a train. Hit us with some reviews. That was a bad one. That one was rough. That one was weak.
You can fix that one in post. Yeah, so before I read the reviews, I just want to mention that the majority of the reviews that I've read, the negative ones, are all have a similar theme, and that is that Fast and the Furious is essentially a ripoff of Point Break.
Okay.
Which I wouldn't know because I've never seen Point Break, so to me, this movie is still gold. But I digress. Here's some reviews. Rotten Tomatoes super reviewer Gimli M says, 1.5 out of 5 stars. Between now and when it was first released on VHS over a decade ago, I tried no less than 8 times to actually watch this film in its entirety. I just finished the task, and I guess I wasn't prepared for it to be quite the barefaced ripoff of Point Break that it was. Some halfway decent acting could probably have bumped this up to a 2-star deal, but as it stands, I can't stretch that far. Chris F. says 3.5 out of 5 stars, definitely the strongest in the series by a large margin. The fleshed out narrative really gives the film more depth than you expect. Emphasizing many side characters is critical to the development as alliances swap throughout the film. Yet it never leaves behind its core appeal of reveling in high octane street racing, where it really draws everything together in the final act with a wild, awesome, enjoyable climax that can feel a bit kitschy and melodramatic, but is otherwise quite strong in its execution. The lack of CG keeps this film feeling fresh and new despite its age.
Right on.
And then moving to Google, Michael Spakowski says, when I was 16, this movie came out. Really enjoyed it in the theaters. There was nothing nearly as cool and hip out at the time. The streets of Winnipeg soon became littered with people copycatting what they seen in the influential movie. Cruise nights were wild from there forward for a fair amount of time, till the government cracked down and started to heavily ticket enthusiasts. For what it was, it did the job. It entertained many, many people.
You know, I don't know that much about cars, but I know that the Winnipeg underground racing car scene is just legendary, the world over.
Yeah. This last one comes from a reviewer. Their name is Ice with 2 E's.
Okay.
They say 5 out of 5 stars and the movie is in all caps. So I'll read it as thus. I love this movie so much. I love racing movies, especially with Vin Diesel. He is such a great actor and I admire him, and he was so supportive when Paul Walker passed. Without him, the Fast and Furious wouldn't have as many likes or anything. BTW, if you did not know, back in the 1900s, Vin Diesel was a breakdancer. Yep, that's right, breakdancer.
Yep.
Red heart, blue heart, green heart, purple heart, yellow heart, fire, orange heart.
Okay. Yes, I've actually seen the video of Vin Diesel doing breakdancing. It's something, all right.
I imagine it to be something like kicking it old school.
Yeah, it's very early 90s breakdancing is what it is. Yeah, this is Run DMC era breakdancing.
Okay.
Well, yeah, so we've got mid-50s from the critics, and we've got 6.8 and 74% from the audience. Let's go to Jordan, our special guest this week. Where does Fast and the Furious fall for you?
13 out of 10.
Okay.
I think from me.
Outstanding.
Solid, outstanding, 13 out of 10. Really liked it. Used to like it. Still like it. Well, What's not to like? You got fast cars. You got some bland lady that really makes the actors like Vin Diesel pop.
Yeah.
You got lots of action. You got DVD players. They're heisting. It's exciting. Kept me on the edge of my seat. I wish I could have run away to go take a pee, but I don't have NOS on my body, so it took me some time to do it. But it's a good movie.
See, I feel like you might have started out as a 10 out of 10, and then you hit your NOS boosters, and you got up to 13, right?
Yes, the score rocketed up to 13 right before the finish of the movie.
Yeah.
There you go.
It would have been 14, but you pushed it the second one too early.
Yeah, hit it too early there.
I know that, I mean, this movie, it's ridiculous. It is. But it's funny how basic this one seems compared to how, I hate to use the word complex, but how complex the plots have gotten in future movies. And it's kind of funny to go back to see where it began. And even though I'm not a car guy, I am a sucker for a good car racing movie. You know, you mentioned Bullet earlier. Have you ever noticed that during that epic chase scene in Bullet that he ends up losing 7 hubcaps during that race scene?
Wow, that's fascinating.
Bit of a classic movie continuity error for you. Yeah, but yeah, I mean I know I still love this movie, and I'll be there to see the new one. But is it a cinematic masterpiece? No, it's not, but it's a hell of a good time. And I mean, I can go mid-80s for myself personally. I kind of want to see the new one in theaters because that's the best way to see it. And I know that with Fast 5, I tried those new motion seats that some of our theaters have. And that is an intense way to watch Fast and the Furious, yeah, I'll tell you that much. Colin, what about you? Whereabouts does this sit for you as the annual watcher of this movie?
Yeah, so, I mean, is the movie a film masterpiece? I'd have to say yes. Yes, it is.
Okay.
I would give it a solid 10 out of 10. I would go, like, Jordan, I agree, like, the 13 out of 10 is good as well. But it's just, I cannot give it less than 100%. It is one of my favorite movies to watch. I'll watch it every year until the day that I die, probably. I've never gotten sick of it. I love every line of it. It is, like Sean said, I do find it very odd to see how, like, I would love to trace back and know, well, clearly it's Fast. It is Fast and Furious. The fourth movie is where things change. It's almost like they gave up on it, and then someone was like, no, this is still good, we can do something with this. And they just, like, they took, like, a dead husk and just breathed, like, fire into it.
Yeah, we've already got a basis for this naming convention. We've got something there, boys.
But it's just, the thing that I think they realized was, like, the street racing was good as a beginner, but then, because Too Fast, Too Furious, Tokyo Drift, they're still about street racing, but then it became more about, like, what crazy things can we drive?
Yeah.
Like, can we drive planes? Can we jump cars out of planes? Can we swing cars around a Dubai tower somehow, mm-hmm. make them fly? And it just becomes so incredible. It's the best franchise of all time, in my opinion, I think. After the MCU, I guess.
Yeah, that's like what I say about this one being so basic in comparison. I forgot how much of the focus was actually on street racing in this movie. Yeah. Because I am so used to everything from 4 and beyond, you know? Those are the ones that are fresher in my memory, at least, so...
Yeah, and that's kind of why, like, the later seasons, they literally just become government operatives.
Seasons. I like how you use the word seasons. it's true. Later. It kind of is. Later,
yeah. But they just become, you know, based like paramilitary agents.
Yeah.
Craziness. But yeah, it's still such a good watch. I like, even watching it this week, I just forget. It's almost like every time I watch it, I remember how much I like it. Like, I somehow forget in the intervening period how good it is.
Yeah.
So yeah, I can't say, I can't, people will probably judge me for how biased I'm being, but I can't bring myself to say a bad thing about this movie.
Well, there we go. That's the Fast and the Furious, and that's our show for this week. A big thank you to our guest for this week, Jordan Ward. Jordan, if people want to find you out there on the old interwebs doing your thing, where can they find you?
Well, thank you very much, Sean, and thank you, Colin, for having me on again. I really enjoyed it. If anybody wants to check out what I do, they can go to goodimprov.com, or you can find me at Good Improv on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. I'm also on Clubhouse. I never use it. I have used it once, but if people want to talk with me there, you can talk with me there, or just shout my name out into the sky, and if I'm nearby, I'll hear you.
Do you have like a call we can do of some sort?
If you have a conch, you can blow. If you've got a horn.
Yeah. Right on. Well, thank you for joining us. If you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out is, well, tell your friends. Word of mouth is so important for a podcast trying to get noticed. We've established on this show, we have taken on the mantle of the official rival podcast of Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, and he already has 1 million listeners. Help get us to 1 million by telling 1 million of your own friends. We can rise up and we can crush Conan O'Brien's podcast. Help us out here. Or if you want to go above and beyond, and this is the other way to help get us noticed, is to go to whatever app it is you listen to your podcast on and give us 5 stars. Doesn't matter what you say in those reviews. You could just say, I live my life a quarter mile at a time. Doesn't matter. It's not for our egos. It just helps drive us up the charts, and it helps us get noticed.
And if you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email at iusedtolikethisone@gmail.com. Also, be sure to check out our website, www.iusedtolikethisone.com. There you can find links to all our podcast episodes, as well as our social media. We have Facebook, we have Instagram, we have Twitter. Go on there, give us some likes, give us some shares, you know. It doesn't matter if you share once or share twice. Sharing is sharing, and sharing is also caring.
It doesn't matter if you share by an inch or share by a mile. Is that what you were trying to...
I was trying to work that in somehow.
And if you would like to be a producer of the show and donate to us, help us monetize what we do for you each and every week, you can go to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne and become part of our Patreon community. Get a shout out on our show, just like our executive producer, Joshua Blum. I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells. Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band Carter and the Capitals anywhere you listen to music. Thank you for listening. And join us next week when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One.